Protests in Nepal have erupted following efforts by the government to censor social media communications. Anger at this move snowballed into a wider protest that focused upon government corruption, which has resulted in 22 deaths so far and seen the houses of various ministers burnt down. Stephen Hill asked Dr. Michael Breen of the University of Melbourne whether there are concerns of more violence from the different actors in this civil dispute.
Yeah, I think that's always a concern, and we haven't seen this type of violence erupt in Nepal for quite a number of years. It has to be going back to the time of civil war. But it's not that uncommon for people to take the streets to express their grievances against the government, and there's been a lot of history of that being successful in bringing forward reforms. But at the same time, I think there has been somewhat of a de-escalation on the streets over the last 24 hours. And with the resignations of the Prime Minister and the Home Minister, I expect that they will be able to come out of this particular uprising that's going on and re-establish democratic governance. But there's always that risk that things could get worse.
Tell us a little bit about the Generation Z that has driven this protest.
Nepali politics has been beset by a lot of self-interested leaders over many decades. The leaders that have been in power have more or less been in power since the 1990s and have taken numerous terms at being prime minister themselves. They were integral in the re-establishment of democracy in the 1990s as well as in the 2000s. Hence, they see themselves as entitled. As the years have gone on, there's been increasing dissatisfaction with corruption and with the lack of development. And we've seen people start to move away from those major political parties. So, for example, the current mayor of Kathmandu is a rapper, so ex-hip-hop star, and he's the first independent to take that rather prestigious position. We also saw a new political party formed by a relatively young television presenter that won a number of seats in the House of Representatives. So it's really quite consistent with the youth essentially giving up on the political leadership of previous generations. They are demanding change, and change hasn't happened, and so they've taken to the streets.
How much of this protest was driven by the plan of the government to censor social media?
In a way that it is a response to the social media ban, but it's pretty apparent that the social media ban is done to stop the spread of allegations of corruption. And it's not the first time that they've done that. They banned Facebook a year or two ago because of people using Facebook to spread information about corrupt politicians. One of the problems recently is the flaunting of wealth by the children of the current political leaders. Theoretically, those children shouldn't have that kind of wealth. Politicians don't earn that much money in Nepal. And so the sharing of that information was one of the things that triggered this uprising.
I've seen successive governments, while they've been democratic, maintained a pretty authoritarian control over many segments of society. There's been a lot of censorship, and politics is riven with factionalism. How difficult it will be to fashion together a consensus in Nepal?
Well, it is extraordinarily difficult to get consensus in Nepal, and so the constitution-making process has aimed towards getting a consensus, and they didn't quite get there. There were some large sectors of society that were left out. The way they do it is they tend to rotate coalitions, and so different parties and different factions will get their turn leading the government and becoming prime minister and the like. I would anticipate that there would be some kind of reformation of a coalition under a different political party, but factionalization has been a real problem. So the prime minister who just resigned and was one faction in that political party, and his factional rival had ended up leaving that political party and started his own political party. And he was recently charged by the Corruption Commission. So that's quite remarkable because it's a former prime minister being charged with corruption, but also it's somewhat suspicious because it is the factional rival of the then prime minister. So we do see corruption allegations being levelled against rivals. But it's fair to say that corruption is quite widespread across the political sphere. I used to live there some years ago, and we had a schedule of power outages, and we would get sometimes only 4 hours of power per day because there was not enough power being generated. And then a new head of the Electricity Commission came in, and he abolished the corrupt contracts. And all of a sudden, there was 24-hour power in Kathmandu. The extent of corruption in that institution was huge. But at the same time, that put offside a lot of, you know, political rivals, and then he ended up being charged with corruption.
At the moment, it looks like the military sort of takes some form of control. And are you confident that there will be a transition back to a civilian government?
I wouldn't say I'm confident, but I am optimistic. So the military isn't particularly autonomous and it hasn't been used against its own people. Even during the civil war, political parties and then the king were very reluctant to use the army against the then Maoist rebels. As I understand it, less people in the streets. So I think that the military has been able to restore some semblance of order. And then I expect again that a new coalition will be formed. But the legitimacy of that new coalition will continue to be questioned by young people until I see some kind of generational change in political leadership.
Dr. Michael Breen from the School of Social and Political Sciences at the University of Melbourne, speaking there with Stephen Hill.